The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Scotland is moving ever closer to major drug policy reforms, including the legal establishment of supervised consumption sites. We're going to hear about that on today's show. But first, on June 15th, Representatives Cori Bush, Democrat from Missouri, and Bonnie Watson Coleman, Democrat from New Jersey, introduced the Drug Policy Reform Act.
The Drug Policy Reform Act is a major step forward in our work to dismantle systems of violence, trauma, and oppression. So today, we are stepping up and speaking out to say we can do better. We can create a world, a more just and a more better world. We can do away with punitive systems of violence and destruction and replace them with systems of care, systems of support, systems rooted in racial equity and justice. That's what the Drug Policy Reform Act will do.
We need a new approach, one that recognizes that we need not lock people away. Those that are struggling should be handled by doctors and counselors, not judges and jailers. Our bill will not only decriminalize personal use and possession of all drugs, but it will shift the focus of federal drug policy from the Department of Justice to the Department of Health and Human Services.
That was Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, Democrat from New Jersey, and Representative Cori Bush, Democrat from Missouri, lead sponsors of the Drug Policy Reform Act. The DPRA is new enough that at the time of this recording, it's not yet been assigned a bill number. On June 17th, the House Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security held a hearing entitled Undoing the Damage of the War on Drugs, a Renewed Call for Sentencing Reform. Here's Committee Vice Chair, Representative Cori Bush.
St. Louis and I thank you, Chairwoman, for convening this important hearing. And let me just say, being tough on crime, let me start with being tough on crime is the reason why we're here today. It is not because social safety nets were being taken care of. It was the tough on crime work of people that even are in this chamber. So 50 years, that's how long our government has waged a war, not on drugs, but on people. Mm-hmm. Our people, they are not statistics. A lot of my colleagues, even here today in Congress, aren't where I'm from. They haven't seen what I've seen. The people and communities harmed by this racist, white supremacist war on drugs, those folks are my neighbors. They're my friends. They're my classmates. They're my loved ones. I will never forget how in the 2-year window as a young person, I lost 40 to 50 friends. Imagine losing friends or community members so frequently that loss and trauma become your norm. In fact, I lost more friends to the war on drugs than not. I had a very, very close loved one of mine who was killed, shot straight in the head because of this nightmare. For those of us that lived through this war, we lived through daily and tragic deaths. What the war on drugs ignited was an actual warfare on our streets. Our grandparents were forced to put their homes up for bond. And when the government threw us in jail and left us without any social safety nets, it was that this was what was needed. But no, many grandparents were forced to become guardians because the war on drugs devastated an entire generation of parents. Children were forced to be caretakers for their parents who fell victim to the cycle of abuse. I watched young boys fall into the trap of selling drugs as a means of survival. Youth joining gangs as a way to secure their homes and their streets from police violence. I know because I was a part of that. It's not something that I read or that I heard, like some folks on here. I saw young women and girls unwillingly fall victim to trafficking, abuse, and exploitation to survive this war on drugs. As a young child and a young adult, I didn't think I had a voice to do anything about what I was seeing. But now, as a congresswoman and as a nurse, I can speak for all my friends whose lives were cut too short. I can speak for those friends who are still behind bars even to this day. And I can say unequivocally that the war on drugs was a failure of policy. It was a failure many leaders in this very chamber are responsible for. Ms. Frederick, thank you for your thorough testimony and providing solutions. The war on drugs has not meaningfully reduced drug use. In what ways has it worsened drug use and overdose deaths?
Thank you so much, Congresswoman, for your question. unequivocally our choices around policy, our draconian investments, our focus on incarceration and criminalization have not only not deterred people from using drugs, but they have also made drug use more risky and more dangerous. Prohibition itself has made our drug supply risky and dangerous. Our choice, that was a choice, to create prohibition and to really push and focus on criminalization has made our drug supply poisoned. And what we are seeing with the overdose rates is that people, one, don't have the education that they need in order to understand drug use and to make sure that they don't die, which is basic. Two, our drug supply is poisoned because people are adulterating it because of the incentivization of prohibition. And three, our communities don't have the resources necessary to navigate addiction because we are bloating our criminal justice system as opposed to the public health infrastructure that people need to navigate addiction. As a social worker, it is very clear to me that we need community supports and resources to navigate people's choices around risky drug use. Our focus on criminalization not only makes it difficult for people to ask for help or to get them, and it also makes it really difficult for us to control the kinds of substances that people are using.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Frederick. Ms. Barkow, you have written extensively on the role of the president and how he can the role he can play in reversing the harms of the war on drugs for those still serving time. Can you talk about these proposals?
Yeah, whatever you all do in Congress, and I urge you to do as much as you can, the president can use the clemency power to reduce sentences. So anyone, for example, who's serving a sentence under any of these mandatory minimums that's too harsh, you know, the people who are on home confinement that someone asked about earlier, keeping them out, the president can do all that through clemency. You know, there's no reason to send any of those folks back. A blanket clemency order would keep them home. He can use the clemency power to reduce these draconian drug sentences that people are serving. And I certainly hope that he uses that power.
Thank you very much. And I'll close here. For years and years, our communities were duped. Our communities were told that these criminal policies were necessary to keep our streets safe. But we know that that was a lie. We know that these policies made substance abuse, substance use health issues even worse. And I implore my colleagues to join us in legislating to promote health and not perpetuate harm. Thank you. And I yield back.
That was Representative Cori Bush. You also heard Cassandra Frederick, Executive Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, and Rachel Lee Barkow, Vice Dean and Charles Seligson Professor of Law at NYU. They were speaking at a House Judiciary Committee Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security hearing entitled Undoing the Damage of the War on Drugs, a Renewed Call for Sentencing Reform. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugpolicyfacts.org. As I said at the top of the show, Scotland is considering major drug policy reforms, including the legal establishment of supervised consumption sites, also known as overdose prevention sites. The Scottish Parliament held a debate June 17th on a government motion on drug policy and handling drug-related deaths. Here's Angela Constance, member of the Scottish Parliament and the Scottish Government's Minister for Drugs Policy.
The First Minister at the start of the year announced an additional £250 million over the next 5 years to promote recovery and to reduce the harm caused by drugs. And in my role, I will continue to work across boundaries to both save and improve lives through drug services, as well as in mental health, homelessness, the justice system, education and prevention, and in tackling inequality. The core aim of this work is to support more people into treatment and recovery that is right for them. And I gave a commitment to Parliament in March to provide an update on this and on funding allocations. So in March, we announced £18 million to four new funds for recovery, local support to families and children, and for service improvement. And I'm pleased to say that those funds opened at the end of May. These are multi-year funds shifting to longer-term funding to provide security for third sector and grassroots organisations who are often at the forefront of saving lives. And I have listened to and acted on feedback about previous schemes, so there is now a lighter touch application process for smaller funds. And we are also funding third sector partners to help people through the application progress. So with the first round of grants this month reaching communities, this funding is already making a difference. Another important step forward has been the publication at the end of May of the new medication-assisted treatment standards. The implementation of these new standards for treatment and care will be one of the key foundation stones to change and to improve services, meaning that no matter where someone lives, the right treatment will be available to them quickly. And these standards make a vital connection between informed and wider choice of treatment and other services and support, such as mental health, housing and welfare, including a presumption of family involvement. And these standards make crystal clear what everyone has the right to expect and can demand from services. Certainly.
Alex Cole-Hamilton.
I'm grateful for the Minister taking my intervention. Does she agree with me that it's vitally important that where we are trying to help mothers who have substance use issues to manage those issues, that they are unable to do so with their children, so we're not compounding the adverse childhood experiences experienced by those children?
Minister.
Absolutely, Presiding Officer. And in short, yes, I agree, we must keep the promise. Going back to the implementation of these standards, which is absolutely key, that's why following the first meeting of the National Mission Implementation Group yesterday, I announced £4 million of investment to ensure that we translate words into actions. The first two standards on same-day treatment and a wider range of options should be implemented as a priority, and we expect this to be in place in many areas by autumn and fully in place by April next year. And the MAP standards also pave the way for new and improved treatment offers. One of these will be long-lasting buprenorphine, Buvidol. This is an alternative to methadone. There are three main benefits. It only needs a weekly or a monthly injection, and this helps reduce the stigma felt by many at having to go to the pharmacy every day. And it also gives people more clarity of thought, allowing them to get on with their lives. And it is not usually associated with overdoses. It won't suit everyone, but feedback from people who have switched to Buvidol in pilot areas and in prison settings is really positive. So we're allocating £4 million this year to encourage services to make this option more available. The number of deaths where illicit benzodiazepines are implicated continues to rise. It is therefore imperative that we build a consensus among clinicians and others, working in collaboration with the sector and people with living experience, to help develop a treatment offer that addresses needs and reduces risks for those using street substances. Related prescribing guidance is being produced this year by both the Drugs Test Task Force and by the Scottish Government. And I will be continuing in my efforts to persuade the UK Government of the necessity for drug checking facilities in Scotland. And this will help identify any substances which put lives at risk. And I am continuing to call on the UK Government to allow for restrictions to be made on the possession of pill presses. Along with many members, I also support heroin-assisted treatment as another option which should be made more available. We know this option requires significant resources and a comparatively long lead-in time to set up, but I believe this option is worth the effort, and we are working with health boards to identify areas where these services could be introduced, and will allocate £400,000 to explore these opportunities. This government also remains fully committed to the establishment of safer drug consumption facilities. The evidence shows quite simply that these help reduce drug deaths. Certainly.
Stephen Kerr.
I'm grateful to the Minister for giving way. And before she goes any further, I wonder if she can comment. Karen Briggs, the CEO of Phoenix Futures in Falkirk, has said, "We know many people across Scotland would benefit from residential treatment but aren't able to access it. Will the government take steps to provide more beds in residential situations?" There are no beds at all in Falkirk currently.
Minister.
Absolutely, Presiding Officer. We are committed to both invest and increase the capacity in residential care, and particularly where there is area of acute need. But going back to the point about safer drug consumption facilities, which I thought Mr Kerr was going to opine on, can I say that I will continue in this area to pursue two approaches at the same time. I am engaging with the UK Government on the evidence and seeking to persuade them to allow these life-saving facilities or to devolve the powers to this Parliament. But also, in the meantime, we are working with services to leave no stone unturned to overcome existing legal barriers and our duty to seek solutions here in Scotland. I want to move on, please, because I didn't realise I only had 11 minutes. I thought I had 13, so perhaps later. I do hope so. Presiding Officer, the majority of people who die as a result of an overdose will have previously been treated in our National Health Service for a near-fatal overdose. Therefore, a major focus in our work will be to improve our response to near-fatal overdoses. The Scottish Ambulance Service set up our first formal near-fatal overdose pathway, and we will expand these pathways so that they exist nationwide. In the first few months of 2021, our frontline emergency services also increased the use of naloxone, which can help avoid death from overdose.
That was Scotland's Minister for Drugs Policy, Angela Constance, speaking before the Scottish Parliament on a government motion related to drug policy and overdose deaths. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Scotland is part of the United Kingdom, currently at least. Scottish voters rejected an independence referendum in 2014. The UK government made a number of concessions, including devolution of some powers to the Scottish government, but there are limits and they're starting to chafe. Drug policy is actually becoming a wedge issue in Scotland. There's already a lot of talk about a second independence referendum, largely because of the UK's decision to leave the EU. In that context, it would make sense for the UK to, shall we say, be reasonable about allowing Scotland to move forward with its drug policy reforms, just to see if that could mollify some of the bad feelings toward Westminster. Scottish members of the UK Parliament spoke about the failed drug war in a debate in the UK House of Commons on that nation's Misuse of Drugs Act, which turned 50 this year. This is Tommy Shepherd. He's an MP for Edinburgh East and member of the Scottish National Party.
I wonder, Mr. Deputy Speaker, what it says about our ability to function as a body which makes and reviews legislation, that such a significant piece of legislation dealing with such a major social problem can lie on the statute book for 50 years without review or amendment. All the more incredible when we consider that by any conceivable measure, it has been an abject failure in trying to achieve what it set out to achieve. As we have just heard, back in 1971, 1% of the British population said that they used the drugs which the MDA would go on to criminalise. Today, that figure is 34%. We are facing the biggest social policy catastrophe of our generation. We have thousands of people dying every year, needlessly, because they do not know what they are taking and help is not available for them when things go wrong. We have tens of thousands of people every year who get a criminal record at the way in which we try and tackle this problem. And there are hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, living in communities up and down this land whose lives are blighted, not just by the misery of people dependent on those drugs in those communities, but by the brutal violence which is used by organised crime to enforce their regulation and supply of these products. By any measure, this policy ought to be reviewed, this legislation ought to be reviewed. But of course it's worse than that, Mr. Deputy Speaker. It's not just the fact that the legislation hasn't been able to do what it wanted to do. It's worse than that because the legislation is now an active cause of the problem. Because the entire area is looked at not as one of public health or well-being, but as one of criminal activity. And the centre of the Misuse of Drugs Act is to criminalise people who use drugs. And that does a number of things. First of all, that immediately means the state has no role in the supply and regulation of these products, and that responsibility is given to the private sector and to organised crime within the private sector. That is the first consequence of the Misuse of Drugs Act. The second is that if people are getting into trouble and need medical help because of their substance and addiction, many of our health and social care staff working in our public agencies are unable or unwilling to put themselves at risk of criminal prosecution by offering that help. And of course, I'd happily give way, yes.
If that's true, how does he account for the fact that we have tens of thousands of heroin users on methadone replacement therapy?
I will come on to look at the concept of drug consumption rooms in a minute, but what I'm talking about is the fact that people have no ability to come to a health professional and say, what is this? They've no ability to ask for clean needles, because these actions are prohibited under the 1971 Act and the schedules to it. But the third thing, which has already been remarked upon, is that what the Misuse of Drugs Act does is it stigmatises big time those who use drugs and puts them in a position where they are unlikely, because of social opprobrium, to come and ask for help. Now, we surely need to have a review and a fresh think about a problem which is so manifestly out of control and where the existing legislation is so manifestly unable to provide any assistance. But, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I always like to try and see the other side of the argument. So I want to try and put myself, I want to ask the question, why is it that people are resistant to review? Why is it that they want to hold on to things as they are? And I can only conclude that it's because they fear the consequences of decriminalisation or of changing the law. They must somehow think that if we were to do that, that we would unleash floodgates of supply into communities where there aren't already drugs, that there would be many more millions of people who would get caught up in this problem because we would not have the criminal mechanisms that we have at the minute. And I say to any colleagues who think that, wake up. Wake up and see what is happening on the streets of your own constituency. Come with me to any medium-sized town in this country. Come and stand in a bar and make your intentions known, what you would like, and within 1 hour, you will be offered any drug of your choice. If you don't want to have the personal contact, order in advance. Go on the internet and you will find a mobile phone number where you can, through the County Lines Network, order whatever you want and it will be delivered to your door. Sometimes you will even get a customer service message asking for feedback on the supply. That is the extent of what we have at the moment. And it is just fantasy to suggest that there are loads of people out there who might otherwise get into drugs who are somehow prevented from doing so by the Misuse of Drugs Act. It is not the case. So we need to surely have a grown-up conversation about what we do of the situation where a third of our citizens potentially could be made criminals by the existing legislation and where it is so manifestly unfit for purpose. I'd like to hope that the Home Office and current ministers could begin that process of review with an open mind, rather than just defending the status quo, and be prepared to look at an evidence-based approach, drawing in international comparisons, and try and work up a better system which is grounded in protecting public health and well-being rather than trying to criminalise behaviour. I would support, my party will support, I think support will be there from all across the House for any bold minister who wanted to take that initiative and begin that dialogue. I'm not saying prescriptively what should be in it. I'm not saying how it should be done. I simply want to have the dialogue, the discussion and the debate, because too many people are dying for us not to do so. But while we are doing that, there are some immediate things that we ought to do. And I want to just turn for a moment to the question of drug consumption rooms, probably better called overdose prevention centres. These are medical facilities, and I have been in them and seen them working in Portugal, in Germany, and in Canada. These are facilities where someone who is using drugs can go and can use their own drugs under medical supervision in a medical facility. This isn't going to make the overall problem any better, but what this will do is drive a focus into the very sharp end of the problem, the point at which people are dying. Because what happens at the moment is not that people voluntarily overdose because they're fed up with life and they want to just commit suicide. That's not the case at all. What is happening is that people are taking substances and they don't even know what's in them. Sometimes a lethal concoction, sometimes much, much stronger than they thought it was going to be. And because it's all criminal activity, they do this activity behind closed doors. It's not something you do in the open. You have to do it behind closed doors. And by the time you realise you have a problem, by the time you can't breathe or you have your heart attack or you need medical help, It is too late to call for assistance. So for the limited number of people in those circumstances, being able to fulfill their immediate addiction under medical supervision would literally be a lifesaver. That is what happens in other countries. It is, you know, it's blindingly obvious that we ought to try and consider that happening here, but the law forbids it. And even pending a change in the law, I do believe that by regulation, the Home Office should allow pilot centres of this to emerge so that we can see for ourselves whether it would work here. After all, what is there to lose? Nothing to lose. Everything to gain. Lives to gain. Now, this doesn't stop people using drugs. This doesn't get rid of the problem. This doesn't make people, you know, get their life back together. It doesn't get people the medical help they might need, the social services help they might need. It doesn't get them a job if they haven't got one. Of course it doesn't. But it keeps them alive long enough so that those interventions can then take place further down the line. And you cannot give help to a dead person. So that is why it is so vital that we have a sensible discussion about these drug consumption rooms and supervised facilities. And the Scottish Government stands ready and has been pressing the Home Office to allow them to go ahead and do this in Glasgow. Which brings me to the final point. I know you wanted people not to go on too long, Mr. Deputy Speaker. So the final point I want to talk about is this, and that is the interrelationship between the devolution of political authority and administrative action in the United Kingdom and this particular problem. Because we have a bit of a disjuncture in that the whole criminal framework, the 1971 Act and others, is a reserved matter here for Westminster, which sets the problem, if you like. But dealing with the consequences of that, the health and social care and the economic fallout from that policy, is a matter for the devolved administrations. And it would seem to me a matter of ultimate sense, not getting into the arguments about Scottish independence or whatever. It would just be a matter of grown-up policy to have the same part of government responsible for the regulation as is responsible for mopping up the consequences of the problem. And that's why I think when the time comes, we need to urgently look at devolution of the controls currently in place in the 71 Act and whatever replaces it to go to the devolved administrations and to be located within a health and social care context which is already devolved. Now, in advance of that, and I asked the Minister, I've spoken with the Minister several times on this matter, and I trust that he is thoughtful on the matter. I do think he is prepared to consider other points of view. I think he's prepared to consider evidence, but I think he feels himself mightily constrained by tradition, convention, and perhaps by political pressure elsewhere. I say to him, though, he has received a letter now from the Drugs Minister in Scotland, Angela Constance, asking for a four-nation summit to consider, amongst other things, working on a pilot basis to establish these types of medical facilities. And I hope very much that in his remarks today he will confirm that he's taking a positive reaction to that response and that he is prepared, if we can't change things overnight across the whole of the United Kingdom, let us employ the apparatus of devolution to allow one part of the United Kingdom to go beyond where other parts perhaps are willing to go at the minute and to collate the evidence, to point a way to the future which could then lead to best practice being adopted throughout the entire place.
That was Tommy Shepherd. He's a member of the Scottish National Party and a member of the UK Parliament. He was speaking in the House of Commons in a debate on the Misuse of Drugs Act, which turned 50 this year. And that's it for this week. Thanks for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.